Welcome back to the United in Motherhood podcast with me, Zoe Young, and today's guest, Nicole Rodginson from Autism Awareness Australia. Nicole is mama to two adult sons, one of which I had the pleasure of meeting, Jack. Jack was diagnosed with autism as a toddler, and his journey to being the awesome 23-year-old man he is today has been nothing short of incredible. Before we get into it, it's important I let you all know that today's episode gets into some topics that may be triggers for some. If you or anyone you know is struggling, seek support. I have left a few resources down below. As always, this is your reminder that this is Nicole's story. It's not yours, it's not mine, and as women, we must respect and accept each other enough to know that we are all doing our best. The United Motherhood podcast, YouTube series, and the community in its entirety is just that. A safe space for us women to learn from one another. Alrighty, let's get to it.
Great, so let's do it.
I'm a mad podcast fan, so...
Are you actually?
Yeah, I really am. I mean, isn't everybody now? I mean, I think that's what's really changed.
Yeah, well, we're talking about this. It's how people, like, consume their... stuff is people listen to podcasts a lot, video content. You're like,
Yeah, I'm kind of biased too, because obviously I'm married to a radio announcer, so I'm just, you know, I really like listening to things. And but I remember I used to talk about podcasts, and people in the radio industry used to say, I just don't know how where they're going. I don't know where they're going to go, and I don't know how people are ever going to make money out of them.
Yeah,
you know, you look back now and say, like, wow,
suckers,
you're so wrong.
I feel you.
So, if anything, now I have dinner once a month with, so the first Thursday of every month, I have dinner with six women who we all met when our sons were diagnosed with autism. We've been having that dinner for 18 years. And so you can imagine what it's like. You know, when the kids were little, we used to talk about autism and the kids and schools. And now we don't talk about any of that.
You know, our life's changed.
Life's totally changed. Now it's sort of usually talking about your elderly parents or, you know, marriages and all that kind of stuff. But we have that dinner once a month. And just as a stock standard, that's where, and what I find is we're all talking about what podcasts we're listening to.
Yeah.
So it used to be what books are you reading? And we are sharing a book, and now it's like, what podcast are you listening to?
Funny how you probably, like, if you had taken, like, notes of those, like,
oh, yeah, it'd be quite
how you would have gone through.
In their early 20s, all very different. And all the women are really different, too. That's what's the weirdest part about something like autism coming into your life. When you're very young, are we just continuing on?
Yeah, go for it.
I think what's strange about autism coming into your life is you go through these various stages, and one of them will be, you know, obviously the, for a lot of people, myself included, the denial. This isn't happening. He's fine. All these people are just crazy. Right through to the fact that you don't want to even read a book about autism. You don't want to go to an event about autism. You make yourself do those things, but at first you don't want to. I don't want to be friends with those people. I don't want to go to a disability group. That's not me. It's not my fabulous life. We can't be doing that.
Yeah.
And then when you do, those people become your best friends for the rest of your life. Yeah. It will be, we joke and call it the autism mafia, is literally my lawyer is an autism dad.
Yeah.
Our dentist is an autism mom. You know, like...
Your network. Our your network, community.
They're our people. You know, we call out, you know, the community of quirk. You know, that's... You get so close to those people with such the shared experience that as we have that dinner once a month, you know, six women from completely different backgrounds, completely different personalities, but they're just my absolute solid friends, you know.
So that's what I love about it. You guys are united in motherhood. This is the whole thing is because it doesn't matter who you are or what you, like, you guys have, you just respect each other and accept each other who you are.
Yeah, it absolutely. And I think it's such a different experience of, we jokingly talk about this with motherhood, like we're hardly experts and we've obviously had done motherhood very differently, but we jokingly say the thing about parenting advice or motherhood advice is literally nobody wants it.
Yeah.
It's always unsolicited and nobody wants it.
Yeah.
Whereas when you've had a child that's had some challenges, you've had to become an expert in parenting. You weren't allowed to wing it.
Yeah.
You just can't. You have to learn how to do it. You have to put the projects in place.
The work.
The strategies in place, and you've got to do the work. So it's a little bit like, you know, that old saying I used to say to parents is, you know, you want to lose weight. How do you lose weight? Well, you watch what you're eating and you go to the gym, right? Stock standard. Why do people not lose weight? Because they don't watch what they're eating. Because
they're cheeky eating chocolate.
Yeah, right? So they didn't do the work, but yeah. It wasn't that important, right? Everyone wants to lose 5 kilos. In this case, the work is that important. It's your child and it's their life and it's their future. So you got to get it right. You've got to do the work. You've got to do the hard yards. So once you know those strategies, it's really difficult not to want to implement them with every child on the planet because they work so well.
Yeah.
So you could be just the most obnoxious, snotty person walking around town telling people how to parent their children better. But literally no one wants to know those things. So just shut up.
You have to bite your tongue.
Totally. Absolutely. Actually, my husband and I have got this trick. Every Sunday morning, we walk around Centennial Park in Sydney and we look at people's babies and toddlers, and the ones that are doing all the things that nobody else would recognize but we do, like they're pointing, they're looking at their mum and dad, they're making gestures. We kind of jokingly under our breath say, oh, that one, not autistic. And it's like...
You play a little game.
We play a little game. Yeah. And my husband thinks it's a funny joke. He said, all these parents have no idea that we're actually rating their children.
Oh, it's our gosh. Sad
black humor joke. But it's kind of, it's so obvious what autism looks like in really small children. Yeah. By and large, I know you can't talk in generalization, but it's often so obvious. We feel so silly for missing it for so long.
Yeah.
But
you were so young. Let's talk about your story. Yeah, so you were a mum. How old were you?
I was 21 when I had Jack and 26 when I had Tom. Yeah, it is young. It was young then, actually. Unheard of now other than
you. No, I know. Whoops. Sorry, mum. But it is. Like, you would have been dealing with really big life-altering situations at a very young age.
Yeah, it wasn't for the faint-hearted. And I don't know, people often ask me this, do you think that was a good thing or a bad thing? I think the answer is I don't know.
It's just your thing.
Yeah, I guess the only thing that I could say is I hadn't long finished university. I was married. I got married at 19. That's even more embarrassing.
But you're still together.
Yeah,
that's true. Beautiful.
That's true.
See, I wasn't married.
25 years later, that joke that started out as something funny to do turned out to be kind of long term. But so it was kind of, I was just out of university and we were young and stupid and, doing all the things that you do when you're young and stupid. And then all of a sudden this comes along. I think the only benefit was for a lot of women who might have gone to university, they have a career, they've chosen their partner with a little bit more seriousness than I chose mine. They made plans for their life, and then this all of a sudden, and they have a healthy baby and it's got 10 fingers and 10 toes and it's all looking good and life is my life, fabulous life, I can see it and it's in the future and that's what I'm doing. And then all of a sudden at around 2 years of age, something's not quite right. And after some investigation, a child could be diagnosed with a developmental disorder. That typically what I've seen is that hits parents really hard, hard, the shock of that. And I think in my case, I was just so young, I hadn't really planned what my life was going to be. My fabulous life wasn't in view. I didn't know.
But having that baby, like you just said it perfectly, when they come out and physically, 10 fingers, 10 toes, you're perfect baby. And he is perfect. Like, what is perfect?
Of
who
course,
knows?
Yes.
But it would have been one of those moments of like, what? Like you said, like you just were like, what do you mean my childhood? Like, did you expect it? Like, what were the signs that Jack presented?
We were spectacularly stupid, I should also say. Both my husband and I, equally as dumb as one another. I would say he's a fair bit older than me. There's quite an age difference between
us. So it's his fault.
It's his fault, yes. He should have been the grown-up. He's 16 years older than me.
Is
so
he?
He should have been
he
one.
He looks good.
Yeah, he's all right.
Just met him.
Yeah, marry someone younger. It'll keep you young. We did have friends that would sort of... I don't know. No one knew how to say it.
Really. Politely say something.
Yeah. People would try and find ways of bringing up, well, it's kind of funny Jack doesn't talk yet. Well, we had an answer for everything. Jack doesn't talk because my husband's a radio announcer and look how much I talk. We talk for a living. Poor kid can't get a word in edgewise. He's so smart. You know, he's not looking at you because he just doesn't need anyone else's attention. He doesn't play with other kids because they're too immature. We would have had every excuse in the book as to why Jack was himself, which is actually why we agreed years later. They did an Australian story on Jack and we dug out some footage that they took, that we all took at his second birthday party, because in my view, it is so obvious that he has autism in that. It's that little home video that we were making. It's so obvious. We wanted that to be on ABC TV. It was like, I want parents to see what it could look like, because we didn't see it. It didn't look obvious to us. and it's really obvious.
Do you feel like it's because you didn't know, or do you feel like it's because it was just your baby you didn't
I think want? It was a combination of, it started off as we didn't know, and then it became as we didn't want to know. Denial is a pretty strong condition, and I guess the one thing I say to parents is denying something doesn't actually make it go away.
Yeah.
It just prolongs you getting on with what you have to do. So I regret the time that we lost in our inability to see what was really very obvious to other people.
Yeah. So his symptoms were delayed.
Delayed speech, all the classics in his case. And, you know, we don't want parents to panic if their child's not meeting all of their developmental milestones. Kids develop differently. But the one thing that people say to you, it's really common, if you're a bit concerned about your child's development, you'll have a lovely aunt or uncle who will pat you on the shoulder and say, oh, don't worry, dear. You know, your mother didn't speak until she was seven. And
oh, yeah.
She's now a rocket scientist. Or, you know, Uncle Bertie didn't. You know, people give you all of these well-meaning but essentially minimizing your concerns. And that can put you off. You know, if somebody says, no, he's fine, don't worry about it. I mean, the local GP said, he's absolutely fine. Nicole, you're just a young mom. You're being really neurotic, you know.
Oh.
So, you know, that was music to my ears. Every time somebody told me it was fine, I would say, great.
It's what you want. It's what you're wanting, hoping for, right?
It's absolutely what you're hoping for. But now with the benefit of lots of hindsight and age, I just think, oh, my goodness. You know what was really an interesting analogy here? At the same time Jack was being diagnosed with autism, my mum was being diagnosed with breast cancer. And what was, yes, it wasn't a great year. Okay. But what was interesting is mum had a lump on her breast and went, oh, my goodness, I should get that checked out. And then all of a sudden there was a team of people behind mum. She had a complete plan and here we go. Here's our breast cancer journey started. Whereas in Jack's case, it was all a lot more fluid than that. It wasn't an emergency. It was people's opinions. Well, maybe yes, maybe no. Go see this person. So it turned out that life-threatening got attention, but lifelong wasn't getting any attention.
Wow, never heard it put like that.
And it struck me as, I know my mum, wherever she is today, would be kind of fair with me saying this, but it was always, we used to comment on it all the time. Mum's breast cancer is getting so much attention and Jack's autism is really only going to be affected by how much effort Ian and I put in.
Yeah.
And it just felt so strange to us that both of these conditions were really serious and needed to have some serious attention to them. But back in those days, I like to think things have changed a bit now, but back in those days, autism and disability in Australia got very little help.
Yeah. And when you say put in the work and like, what does that look like when you say, you know, put in the effort? And you hear these things all the time of parents of children with disability putting in the work for a child with autism. For you,
yeah.
What does that look like?
Well, it's kind of funny. At first, I didn't know because what was the experience then and sadly is still the experience now. Families will often go through the diagnostic process and at the end of that, you kind of get the tissue and see you later and good luck with that. And you know,
I have a girlfriend going through that at the moment. She's like, I actually don't know what to do.
No, they're not very good at saying, it's not a condition where it says, here, these are three tablets, take them three times a day and for 2 weeks and you'll be fine. You know, this is a, go Google it, see what works for your family.
Yeah.
Those kind of things drive me insane because
daunting.
We have some science and we have some evidence and we have some research and we know what works. So giving people this kind of nebulous, go Google it, is really unhelpful because as you can imagine, Google's fantastic. There's some great resources, but there's also some absolute nonsense.
Oh, I always think I'm dying.
Yeah.
You Google and you're don't like, Google. I'm dead. Something's wrong. I've got a brain tumor. Yeah. I've got a headache.
So you're going to go down a rabbit hole and you're going to waste a lot of time.
Yeah.
And you know, that's what's really frustrating for families. So, and you got to remember in my day, if you can imagine, this is, you know, the year 2000, 1999, the year 2000. There wasn't a Google. Like, there literally wasn't a Google. So
I was the Olympics.
So old.
You don't sound old at all.
But yes, it wasn't, right? So here I am. I'm 21. I don't have Google. You know,
you've been told your son has autism.
Yeah. If you want to go through the public system, you're going to be on wait lists forever. Thankfully, my husband worked in the media industry, so he had the kind of income that meant we could go and see private doctors, and I understand that's not available for everybody. But still, it was a couple of months to get in to see anybody, and they'd want to see you, and then come back in 3 months, and we'll see if he's changed. And all the while, you're looking at this little toddler, and this sneaking suspicion is getting, you know, louder and louder and louder in your head that this isn't right. Something's not quite right. And so you're devastated, you're scared, you're confused, you've got it all going on.
Yeah.
And I think what happened is we did have the internet. And back in those days, they used to have these things called chat rooms. And a very early precursor to WhatsApp. I feel like I'm translating generation.
Yeah, like I'm just a chat room. So it sounds like a sus online. Like
it so does. And it, they kind of could be. Anyway, you find this particular topic, a child's development, and you go into this chat room. And I went in and I started typing symptoms. And I said, my son has got this really strange ability. He knows the alphabet back and front. I can put all the letters of the alphabet in front of him and ask him to find the letter K and he can find it. But he can't say mama. He can match 5-digit numbers in a field of 20, but he can't point and ask for something.
Gosh.
So this kid seems to be able to, he remembers everything.
Yeah.
But he can't communicate. So it just, it didn't make sense. And there was a woman in that chat group and she came on and said, well, my son's got a similar thing and he's just been diagnosed with something called hyperlexia. I didn't even know what hyperlexia was. It's actually just code for autism.
Okay.
But it's a child who has an unusual and a slightly obnoxious ability with letters and numbers and reading. But their comprehension probably doesn't match that. Yeah. So you might be able to read the word cat, but if I showed you a picture of a field of animals and said, where's the cat? The child wouldn't be able to comprehend it. So it's a splinter skill. So it's common in autism. Some kids in autism might have unbelievable skills in one particular area, but huge deficits in another. And in Jack's case, that was communication. So that woman pointed me in the direction of what to start looking at. And then she politely said, look, I live in Sydney. What were the chances? You're more than welcome to come over one day for a coffee and our sons can meet.
Wow.
So she was just about to leave Australia. Her husband took a job in Silicon Valley and they were just about to leave Australia. I went and had a coffee with her. And as a result, the spot that her son had in a treatment center with a speech pathologist was opening up and I could take the spot. So what's crazy?
Wow, the universe, hey?
Well, what's crazy about that story is that woman who now lives in Sydney is still part of my monthly dinner. She's one of the six women that I still meet every single
month. You met on a sus chat room.
I met on a sus chat room. And not only that, but the intervention center that she put me in was the clinician was Elizabeth Watson, who became my business partner for 15 years. And we opened 3 early intervention centers together and have is still to this day are incredibly close. So that little interaction in that weird chat room kind of set up the rest of my life. It was
that
very
is
strange.
So cool. And it's funny how just all these things that I've been talking about with these women is even like Sally Obermeiter, she, with her fertility issue, she did 8 years of putting her head in the sand saying, it'll happen, it'll happen, it'll happen. And then once she got help and it happened, she's like, why didn't I do this sooner? Like, I feel like so many people with things going on, you try and work through it, but it's so important to seek.
Well, I think, I bring it back to that breast cancer analogy because there were just is there's no way you would say to a woman with a lump in a breast, come back in 3 months and we'll see if it's any better.
Yeah.
But we do that to babies who are not reaching their developmental milestones. We say, not really sure, even though we have spectacular tools now that we can diagnose these kids really as young as 18 months. So there's absolutely no need for someone to wait. If you see a clinician and they give you an answer, which is, I'm not really sure, you need a second opinion. You need a third opinion. You just need to keep digging.
Keep going.
You need to keep going. Because, again, coming back to that question you asked about what the work is, we know these kids, they're not learning like typically developing kids. You can take kids in really impoverished areas. I remember noticing it when I was in India. I was on a trip in India. And I saw these little kids on the side of the road and they lived with their families in, you know, a level of poverty you just wouldn't be able to see in Australia. And there were such cute little kids and they were running around and I was looking at them and I can't look at kids and not think of autism, right? So I immediately think, oh God, they're running near the road. God, I'm so glad they don't have autism because if they had autism, they'd run into that traffic and here I am worrying about them. These kids I don't even know. Right? Anyway, they come up to me, they see me looking at them and they're like, hi lady. And it was just, they were just so glorious and they were so articulate and they were, you know, they were 5 and 6 and I thought, wow, it hit me. Like it just hit me and it my God, these kids are fine. they're actually fine. They didn't have to have wooden toys. They didn't have to have phonetically themed or videos or DVDs about learning. They're actually fine. They're really, really poor. There'll be lots of issues in their life, but it's not affecting their development or how they speak. So what did I think was going on with Jack? I was saying, oh, we haven't quite bought the right book, or we haven't shown him the right video, or...
The world we live in, though.
Yeah.
It's like, why is my kid not sleeping? Oh, you need this, 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 and this. It's like, okay, gotta go and afterpay that. Yeah. You can't afford it. No,
your kid's actually going to be fine. Yeah. You can neglect them and they're good, right?
They'll figure it out.
There'll be a good book in it for them later on in life. But in kids with developmental disabilities like Jack's, they won't just pick it up from the natural environment. Watching TV, just going to kindy, that's not enough to pick up language like it is in typically developing kids. They have to be taught. And in Jack's case, he had to be taught every skill he didn't have.
Wow.
And it starts from the very, very beginning. And it came by way of this book. So this infamous woman that was moving to Silicon Valley, she gave me the book at the end of that coffee morning. And the book was called Let Me Hear Your Voice. And it was written by a mum in New York City who had two children on the autism spectrum. And it was like a guide. It was this is what I did with this child and this is what I did with this child. Now, it's become an absolutely famous book because it's quite old now. But I got it. I bought it home from her house. I sat on the couch and I read it and I didn't stop. And it was a long weekend. I'll never forget it. And I gave it to Ian. He read it. He didn't stop. Put it down, gave it to my mum, she read it, she didn't stop, gave it to my dad. The whole family devoured this book. And it was like somebody gave us a map. It was like, go do this. Go do this and your kid will be all right. Now, I didn't know he would be all right. You can never guarantee that a child that has good, effective intervention will reach their best outcome. But what I do know is not doing those things will get you nowhere.
Yeah. And you're very passionate about early intervention.
Yes, my God. Early intervention.
I stalked you online. And you said 18 months.
Yeah, I think we could even go younger. I think we're going to go younger. I think increasingly the research is showing us that we're going to be able to pick this up in babies.
Yeah.
And or even babies at risk. So we know from sibling studies is if there's a sibling that's at risk, if we start intervening in terms of speech and language development when they're very young babies and making sure they hit those milestones, are we helping potentially jump-starting some of that developmental delay? That's what we want to do.
And is it genetic? Can it be genetic?
Look, the answer is probably yes. I think in the long run, we're going to work out that there isn't an autism. There's probably autisms.
Okay,
there'll be many types of it because it manifests itself so differently.
Yeah.
So people will, you know, my knowledge of autism came through watching Rain Man, which is so outdated.
There's a really good one called Atypical.
Atypical. I love that one.
Yeah, one of my favorites. Yeah,
I rate that one.
Yeah, I love it.
There's another kind of like silly, like The Good Doctor. That's a bit lame. Yeah. But, you know, people's view of autism can sometimes be the view of the person that they know with autism, whereas it really is a very, very wide spectrum. So it can affect people in that it's just a quirk. It's a personality trait. It doesn't have any effect on their IQ. They can go through life with having it as being part of their personality, part of who they are, but it doesn't have a big disabling factor in their life. Whereas it goes right through to the other end of the spectrum to individuals who will never be able to speak, who have significant intellectual delays and challenging behaviours, who will essentially remain quite childlike for the rest of their life and never live independently. And remember, there's everything in between.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to talk about autism without keeping in mind it's a really different condition. And when, you know, typically for 15 years at our early intervention centre, it was my job to meet parents when they'd first come in.
Yeah.
And by and large, for the most part, they were absolutely devastated. One of my favourite jobs was actually to ask people how they'd found us. And it wasn't being nosy. It's hearing the story of how a family came to realise something was different. And then them realising how they managed once they found out was a really key indicator to me how successful the child was going to be. And I should qualify that by saying I don't mean how well the child will do in terms of their outcome. Will they go on to be prime minister? I don't mean that. I mean a family that gets it, they're on board. One might be more on board than the other. Mum and dad really go in lockstep.
Yeah.
But they understand it. They recognise there's a problem. They understand the steps that are involved in what they have to do, and they're willing to do it.
Yeah.
show me that family and I will show you 110 times a better outcome for those children in the long run. And it's not the better outcome, where do they sit on the autism spectrum? It's bigger than that. Is the family happy? Is the child happy? Is the family unit working? Is the child in the right educational setting? Is everybody reached their best outcome? Have they kind of got across the finishing line of life and look back saying, I'm pretty happy with where we are right now, and not living in crisis? And that's what I wish for all families with kids with autism.
Yeah, 100%. Sorry, my voice is going really weird on this podcast, by the way. I'm like trying to like chug water. I'm like, what is going on? But so you're a mama to two sons.
Yeah.
Were you worried second time around? Is that even a worry?
I said I was an idiot. I think you are just really glossing over the fact that I was an idiot.
You're not. You were just a mama.
I think we joked at the time, well, we own the flashcards, so let's do that again. Look, honestly, in my 45-year-old self that I am now, if I had my 45 hat on, I'd say, what were you thinking? My God, you had one child that was challenged enough. Quit it, you know, you guys just have the genes that don't need replicating.
But thank God you did.
But thank God we did, because Tom is like just the absolute light of our lives. I mean, he is just one of the most glorious humans. And I used to worry when he was very little, there's 5 years between them, and I used to worry, we talk about Jack so much. Our family is so dominated by autism. It's so dominated by his intervention. We had a staff of people that worked in our house with Jack. I mean, he was doing 30 hours a week of intervention. Wow. Every book that was on our cupboard was about autism. I mean, we were doing this seriously.
Yeah.
I used to worry, but then I had nothing to worry about because Tom's little personality was obviously like, when I get out there, you're all going to know me. And as a result, now he's 18. He's just so mature and gregarious and sensitive, and he's 18 going on sort of 38.
He's a beautiful boy.
He's just a beautiful boy, and he's a great brother.
But you parent every child differently. So I've come from a family where anyone that listened to my other podcast will know my sister has mental health concerns, issues, I should say. And my parents sat me down and said, you know, she's special needs and we're going to have to give her that because she needs it. And we were lucky that we didn't, in a way.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It wasn't a favoritism thing. It wasn't an anything thing. It's just a parent.
Fact of life.
Yeah. It's just a parent thing. You do the best for each of your kids.
Yeah. In actual fact,
different things.
The best line that Tom actually said about that didn't make it to the cut in the second Australian story they did. Oh, by the way, everybody thinks, Jack thinks everybody gets an Australian story. Okay. Like if you're an Australian, you've got an Australian story, you'll get one. He happens to have had two. And funnily enough, when somebody might say to him, oh, I saw your Australian story, I really liked it, he'll say, oh, I haven't seen yours yet.
Oh my gosh.
But he's not being a smartass. He's like, oh, I literally haven't seen yours, but I'm looking forward to seeing it when it comes on.
That's the best.
So he's kind of had two. But anyway, when they were filming the second one, they wanted to interview Tom, and he was older by this stage, and we allowed him to be interviewed.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't let us be in the room. But we were just outside sitting in the hallway, and they asked Tom the question, what was it like having your family so dominated by Jack? Like, what was it like having parents whose singular focus was about Jack? And Ian and I looked at one another and we like have breath
about
went
to
in
cry.
Thinking, oh my God, what's he going to say? We've scarred this child for life. And his response was just perfect. And he said, oh, was it all about Jack? He kind of laughed. He said, yeah, of course it was all about Jack. But he said, Jack kind of had a problem that needed dealing with, and my takeaway is that if I have a problem in my life needed dealing with, I'm pretty confident my parents will be there for me.
That's the best.
And it was like, my God, he was like
15. What a legend!
I mean, he was like 15 at the time or something. It was like, oh my God!
But you know what?
I guess that's it. He was like, he's mature enough to say, okay, the issue here is with Jack. And then the great part now is Jack is 23, and this is many, many years later. Is there aren't any issues, and autism isn't the biggest thing in this family, and it's not all about Jack. And but it's doing the work early that
has set you up.
Is set you up. Yeah.
That's one of my final questions is what is Jack doing? What's his life like now?
His life is spectacular. Jack, you know, has put his hand on his heart, and you can just say he's having his best life. Let me explain that a bit better. I can say that of all my friends who have kids with autism, some have got kids who are very mildly affected and others have kids who are really severely affected. And Jack sits in the middle of the autism spectrum. That's the best way to describe him. So he's got a disability that comes along with it, but he's very, very independent. He's done really well. We got to put our hand on our heart and say, We helped him. We gave him everything we possibly could do to help him, and it's worked out really well for him. So when he finished school, he started an apprenticeship, and he's been working for the last 5 years as an apprentice chef.
That's amazing.
This is amazing, yeah. And really amazing for somebody with autism, because one of the common characteristics is an inability to cope with noise and crowds. And you can imagine a commercial kitchen is it's pretty amazing. So he does that really well. He took a few months off when we went traveling. He and his brother and I went traveling to New York and down through Washington, and he's just gone back to work. He's working down at Bondi Beach in Harris Farm Markets because he just wanted something a little bit simpler, something that was, you know, fairly straightforward while he works out what's next. But, you know, he and his brother were out at a concert last night. He's got a group of friends he goes out with at the weekend. He'll come home, he'll have a beer. He's got a one beer rule, which is everybody, like your Australian story, should just have one beer. Because beer is good, but why would you ever have a second beer?
Yeah.
Because it could make you tipsy.
But that's smart.
Sure, it's smart.
Take Jack's rule.
Take Jack's rule. Don't take his mummy's rule, which is not quite so strict. So look, he's really independent. He's doing really well. I mean, we just love him because he's weird and he's quirky. He's Jack. I mean,
we're all weird though. We've all got our bits. Right?
We've all got our bits, and that's the point. And he's happy. He's honestly happy, and that's all that you need kids to be. You don't need them to be prime minister. You don't need them to be lawyers. You don't need them to be anything. You just need them to be happy. And I think parents only realize that if they get a glance at the other side of what unhappiness could be.
Yeah.
But fundamentally, the most important thing, message I really want to parents, I sound like such an old lady here, but really, I wish I had have had this hindsight. When Jack was diagnosed, I didn't know any adults with autism, and I didn't know any parents who had been through this long journey. There wasn't anyone to ask outside of a couple of books. And now it's my advice to parents is, I know you're really sad, and I know you're really shocked. And some days you just feel like you can't quite climb out of that, and it's never going to get better. But you will climb out of it, because not doing anything will not make this go away. Like, you just have to do the work. You have to be able to, all those years later, look back and say, I did my darndest, and this is where we landed. And I think you do, I actually think you do that for all of your children. Yeah. It's just when one has a condition that it's not up for debate, that you can't assume it's going to be okay. You have to get the help in. It's a really different scenario in Australia now than it was when I was young. There now is the National Disability Insurance Scheme. If you have a young child that you're thinking about, or a friend, make sure they realise that help is here.
Yeah, financial support, isn't it?
Financial support. You know, it's not perfect. It doesn't come in a wrapped up package of, this is what you need to do, and here's the phone number, and this is the day you start. You're still going to have to do your research. You're going to have to do your work. We've got lots of resources on our website, which is Autism Awareness Australia.
I'll link it all down below.
Yeah, great. Come and have a little look at that. There's lots of resources there. You're still going to have to do the work, but financially you're going to get some help. And back in the old days, that wasn't the case. You know, help only really went to families who could afford it. So
And this is new, isn't it?
This is very new. Yes, it's only been rolled out across the country in the last 3 to 4 years.
Wow, okay.
So now it's available all across the country wherever you are. So there is help. There are resources. You just have to find a way. It's easier said than done, I realise, because this is many years ago for me. But you have to surround yourself with the people who are going to be supportive. If you've got a grandparent, if you've got a friend, if you've got people who are a bit naysay, oh, he's fine, you're worrying too much. You kind of have to park those people outside your life for a little while. We had that with Ian's mum, who kept saying, he's fine. You two are just, I'm not sure what you're worried about. Anyway, years later, when she was a very old lady, she'd say, see, Jack's fine.
Because we work so bloody hard.
Exactly. It's like, what are you guys kidding about?
Yeah.
So I think you have to surround yourself with really positive people that are going to help you do it. Mm-hmm. And on your sad days, you're allowed to have a sad day. Just tag team it with someone who can jump in for you.
Yeah.
That was the deal Ian and I had, is if you're having a day where it all feels a bit on top of you, tag you out, you're done, and I'll step up. You can't both be down on the same day.
So it's finding your community, I guess, that can
genuinely
be there.
Yeah, and look, it might not be your partner. It might not be your mum and dad. It might not be who you think it is. That's the amazing thing. I've seen people step up. The great pleasure and honour of literally knowing thousands of families of kids with autism over the last, 18, 20 years is I've just seen people pull together. I've seen people make it work. I've seen what community actually looks like.
Yeah.
And it's pretty darn magic when it works well.
It's pretty cool. I feel like we should end it on that. I feel like that's a really beautiful note to stop. But I'm going to link everything down below. So any questions, head there, because you said it's an amazing resource.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for your time. You're amazing.
Thanks for talking about autism.
How incredible is she? What a woman. I think this is the first podcast I actually didn't talk over someone. I think. Anyway, I have left all the links down below to all things Autism Awareness Australia. Be sure to check those out. I'll be back in your ears next week. Weekly podcast, you're asking? Maybe. If you're feeling kind, give the potty a rating and a review. I'll totally love you for it. Peace out, mamas. I'll see you next week. Or hear you next week? You'll hear me next week. Bye, guys.